Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. As always, we're sponsored by Viget. Listen, if you think you're smart, can easily kick anyone's ass in sports betting, highly recommend downloading Viget. Bet fake coins, win real prizes. You could literally win a PS5 if you're that good at sports betting. Anyone 18 plus can enter. Use code ALLSTARS to help benefit the show. And with the last, you know, few games, the NBA Finals, entered the NBA Finals contest. You can also be entered to win additional prizes in terms of coins, can upwards of $1,000 worth of coins. So that'll easily get you the PS5 if you get first place. So why not start now? You can still win. There's still a chance. So give it a download and use code ALLSTARS. So we are back. I got some new technology. I finally have a new computer that will not die if my power cord is jiggled even the slightest. I have new stuff. I have a new webcam. So we're feeling good. I have blown our entire budget. I have taken out a loan on behalf of the show. So enjoy that credit, Robbie. I'm kidding. But we're back. Like we've said for probably the past few weeks, it is a bit of a lull period. That's kind of what happens in July. But the big exciting news is, for once, the MLB is the exciting portion of the year. MLB All-Star Game. They have decided the starters and reserves. Yeah, no, we're all good with the names. That was a bit of a mix-up on my behalf. But, we're going to talk about them a bit. A lot of no-brainers. Shohei Ohtani will be really cool stuff. We'll be pitching and playing. I don't know if he'd be playing right field, but at least be a DH. So that's really cool.
He was the starting DH for sure.
Yes. And then, so you want to start with the AL? Might as well.
Yeah. So I'll start here with the starters for the AL. I got the list right here in front of me. So like I said, Shohei Ohtani of the Angels will be the DH. He'll also be one of the pitchers that'll probably come in at some point just for fun. So the starting catcher, Salvador Perez, he's been the best catcher in baseball this year for the Royals. No question there. He's above 20, or he's at 20 home runs over 50 RBIs. He's been cooking. First base for the Blue Jays, Vlad Guerrero Jr. We've talked about him on the show before. This man is a superstar in the making. Already caught up, you know, he's on pace with home runs in terms of how his dad was on pace for home runs. And we know how great his dad was. So he's no doubt, no question, all-star this year. Really cool one, though, is second baseman, his teammate, Marcus Semien, who has had maybe the hottest first half of the season. Cooled down a little bit this past month, but just on fire, batting above .350 for the better part of the first half of this season. So great job for him, and great job by the selection committee to make him a starter. Rafael Devers of the Red Sox is going to be starting at third alongside shortstop and teammate Xander Bogaerts. And the outfield, so Judge is hurt, but he will Trout is hurt. Mike Trout is hurt, but he was listed as a starter. I am not sure if his replacement has been named yet, but we'll get to the other outfielders that are there. But the other starters along with Trout are Aaron Judge of the Yankees and Teoscar Hernandez of the Blue Jays. So that's three starting offensive players for the Toronto Blue Jays, first base, second base, and I believe right field. So they kind of highlighted the offense. The starting pitchers that made it for the AL, we've got, this is a hefty list. We've got Shane Bieber of the Cleveland Indians, who I believe is the starter, but he's also hurt right now, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see what happens. Garrett Cole of the Yankees, Nathan Eovaldi of the Red Sox, which is kind of a surprise, but you know, good job for him. Kyle Gibson of the Rangers, who's been absolutely spectacular this season for my fantasy team. Yusei Kikuchi of the Seattle Mariners, Lance Lynn and Carlos Rodon, both pitchers for the White Sox, are going to round out the starting pitchers. So before we get into the reserves here, what are your first thoughts on the AL starters?
I love the fact that there are three Blue Jays players starting. You already touched on it. I got a chance to see Vlad Jr. 2 years ago at this point play when he was in his rookie year. It's really cool to see him blossoming and kind of all that hype really starting to take form and sort of shape up to what I guess, you know, the critics sort of expected to happen. I mean, his dad's Vlad Guerrero Sr. He had a storied career himself, so it's nice to see him follow and even maybe trace his own path to be even greater than his dad. The two Red Sox players, I don't think you or I could have predicted that to start the season, but they've been red hot for a reason. And
maybe
rounded
Devers
out.
Just because he's great, but yeah, two of them, that's, you know, great job by the Red Sox.
Sure. I just I'm a little bit ignorant when it comes to the AL just because I watch so much NL, you know, because of the Phillies. Mike Trout, obviously well-deserving. I got to say, though, and we'll get to this when we talk a little bit about, like, the closers and, like, the other pitchers in the AL, the Yankees very much lucked out in terms of their all-star picks. Gerrit Cole, fine, because, like, Gerrit Cole's not having a good season, but he's still, like, fairly dominant. Like, no matter what you want to say, like, it's hard to pitch in Yankee Stadium, and he's doing a pretty good job. He's not as dominant as he was in the Astros. Judge, fine. But there is one pitcher on this list who should not be on there because he is that awful. And that, and I'll have to spoil it, Aroldis Chapman is on the AL All-Star team, if I'm not mistaken.
He is.
Why?
Like,
you could give the AL team like a 6-0 lead and he'll blow it. 100%. It's an All-Star game, too.
105 while doing it.
Listen, for whatever reason, Nolan Ryan is probably my favorite pitcher of all time because he could throw absolute heat, and he had 7 no-hitters. But that man didn't give up grand slams at every opportunity. And he also used to pitch, like, 7-8-inning games, not just like, oh, yeah, come in for 2 innings, maybe.
Yeah, you
have 6 outs. And listen, that's not to knock closers in general. Like, they still have a hard job. They're dealing with the pressure 100%. But Aroldis Chapman sucks. I can't figure out why he throws 105.
Yeah, it's interesting. Before I get to the bench players here, I'm just looking. I want to point out that the Texas Rangers have as many All-Stars as the New York Yankees, which makes me very happy. I just wanted to shout that out. But no, you're right. Chapman needs to be much better than he is. I mean, they're paying him how much millions of dollars? He is a World Series champion, so... Although he tried
he
his
also
best not
blew
to be.
That almost blew that game because was yep. it Ajay Davis hit like a was it a 3-run homer off him?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, or and
at least a 2-run shot, yeah.
I'll honestly just a quick aside. Ajay Davis when he gets that home run, he is choked up on the bat, like he is at the top of the bat, like you would in Little League, and he just let that ball rip. And I thought like that image is so funny, but it's also like just the purest thing I've ever seen in my life.
100%.
I digress. 100%. So
all right.
You got
it. Oh, yeah. So let's get into the bench here. So we'll start with the relief pitchers as we've already started there. So Aroldis Chapman of the Yankees is one of them. Matt Barnes of the Red Sox has been one of the best closers in baseball. Liam Hendricks for the White Sox.
Yeah.
Ryan Presley for Houston. And then Gregory Soto for Detroit. I'm going to be honest. I don't really know who the hell Gregory Soto is. But one of the cool things about baseball is that every single team does, in fact, get an all-star. So he was the nominee for the Tigers this year. I believe he is their closer, and I mean, he's played, from what I see statistically, he's played well this year. It's just, if you're the worst team in baseball's closer, you're not going to get many opportunities. So, either way, good to see him there.
Who made it
and
for the
batting
Royals?
Reserves. Sorry.
Oh, Salvador Perez. Yeah, duh. Okay.
You know, Sally Perez was the starter. So, for the backups, the catcher is going to be Mike Zunino of Tampa Bay. He's literally batting like 180, but he has 20-plus home runs, so that's why he's here.
We like that.
We've got... Oh, this is an alphabetical order. So we've got a second baseman in Jose Altuve of the Astros. We've got shortstop Bo Bichette for Toronto Blue Jays.
Bo Bichette. Shortstop.
He's great. He's young.
Yeah,
he's great.
Fast. I mean,
as the fourth
fast.
Blue Jay offensive player. Yeah, that dude can run. We got another shortstop here, Carlos Correa of the Astros. First baseman, Matt Olson of the Athletics. Third baseman, Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Indians. First baseman, Gerald Walsh of the Los Angeles Angels. If you don't know anything about him, you're just like me, but this dude has been going nuts this year for absolutely no reason. He essentially is what Anthony Rendon should be doing for that team. But I digress now. Then the outfield subs, and I'll in a second give you who I believe is my suggestion for who should be starting for Trout, but we've got Michael Brantley of the Houston Astros, Joey Gallo, and Adolis Garcia of the Texas Rangers. And Cedric Mullins of the Baltimore Orioles.
Orioles that got it.
Yes. Also, he is my choice to replace Mike Trout. He is the best player in baseball this season. I shit you not. He is batting over .315 all year, near or above .400 on base percentage all year. He has been the most consistent piece in this obviously horrible Orioles lineup. By no means is this any more necessarily than just like one really great first half of a season for Cedric Mullins, but like give the Orioles a little bit of love here. This is of, you know, I got a couple of these guys on my fantasy team. Cedric Mullins is the best one. I promise you this. The only other one I would consider is Adolis Garcia, because he's the same thing. He's just like this random dude who's just been awesome this year. I love Michael Brantley. I hate Joey Gallo. Give it to one of the young guys, though. That's my thought here. They're going to be more fun, especially on defense, especially because Joey Gallo in center field sounds hilarious. But that's my thought on it. Do you have any other suggestion on who should necessarily replace Trout of those four outfielders there?
I mean, you seem pretty gung-ho about Cedric Mullins, so I'll side with you in this case. It's nice to maybe see an Oriole play and be good, so we got to give it to our boy Cedric.
Of course. And then we got two backup DHs in the American League. We've had J.D. Martinez of the Boston Red Sox and Nelson Cruz, the representative for the Minnesota Twins. The Twins having a rough year, but Cruz still one of the top DHs. Yes, Shohei Ohtani, J.D. Martinez, and Nelson Cruz. The one thing I'll say about them, J.D. Martinez has gotten cold. Like, he is still batting close to 300, but he was batting like 330, 340 most of the year. Of course, right when I trade for him in fantasy is when he starts to cool down. But
there you go.
He's the one on this list that was probably the most surprising to me, despite, you know, how much success the Red Sox have had. But either way, those are, you know, obviously by far the three best DHs in baseball. So any thoughts on the reserves there other than Cedric my ploy for Cedric Mullins to be the starting center fielder?
Surprised Nelson Cruz still exists, to be honest. That's my own ignorance. Like, Nelson Cruz seems like he's been around for ages.
He has. He's just been here forever. Yeah. All right, let's move into the he's a hoss, man. He's gonna be doing this forever till the day he dies. All right. The National League, we're gonna start here with the starting batters and pitchers. So first for the offensive sheet, we're going to have catcher Buster Posey. We talked about him a bunch. He's won my MVP superlative a couple times this year. A spectacular resurgent season for him. First baseman Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves. Rough year for him, but he's still the starting first baseman. Adam Frazier of the Pittsburgh Pirates having a sensational year. He's going to be the starting second baseman. Nolan Arenado of the Cardinals will be starting at third base. MLB's baby child, Fernando Tatis Jr. of the Padres, will be the starting shortstop. And the outfield is Ronald Acuna of the Braves, and then Nick Castellanos and Jesse Winker, both from the Cincinnati Reds, who are both having exceptional offensive seasons. Winker is just sending every pitch he sees out of the stadium, and Castellanos has been batting literally 350 for the entire season. It is absurd. Check those two out because they are the reason the Reds win baseball games. And then For the National League starting pitchers, so I'm going to start this by saying Jake DeGrom, who I assume would have been the starter, has decided to skip the All-Star game to rest, be with his family, and prepare for the second half of the season, as the Mets are currently leading that division.
As the Mets will need him every game to win the pennant.
Correct. He will start pitching all 5 days in the rotation.
Yes.
But the other pitchers that he was joined with, and it hasn't been stated yet if he's going to be replaced by anybody, but Corbin Burns of the Brewers, Yu Darvish of the Padres, Kevin Guzman, or I think it's Gossman, of the Giants, German Marquez of the Rockies, Trevor Rogers of the Marlins, who another guy I found in the free agency wires of fantasy who's been sensational this year, our Philly, Zach Wheeler, who has been one of the best pitchers in all of baseball this season, and another Brewers pitcher, Brandon Woodruff, is going to round out the starting pitchers in the National League. So thoughts on the starting batters and pitchers for the NL?
I'm so salty Realmuto didn't get a start.
I know. I know.
I know Buster Posey's been having a pretty good year, but like I'm so biased and it's fine. But it's his third straight All-Star selection for Realmuto. As he's a reserve this year, so be it. But yeah, I think Freddie Freeman's a bit of a surprise. I mean, fan favorite, but yeah, has been having a great year. I want to get into the reserves because they're honestly interesting because we have Realmuto at catcher.
Oh, yeah.
Max Muncy at first, who is a pretty dominant player. Honestly, like, the reserves are, like, their own separate team would be pretty good.
The reserves for the NL genuinely could be their own team. So let's truly go through this here. So, like we said, Realmuto of the Phillies is the backup catcher and honestly could have been the starting catcher. Yeah. Max Muncy of the Dodgers, he can play every position in the infield. He's incredibly versatile. Ozzie Albies, the second baseman for the Braves, the one who I really just don't understand how he's not starting. Chris Bryant, third baseman for the Cubs. There's no reason that dude shouldn't be the starting third baseman. He's had so much better of a season than Nolan Arenado, and honestly might even just be a better player than Nolan Arenado. This just, that one really confused me. We've got Brandon Crawford, the shortstop for the Giants, Jake Cronenworth, the versatile infielder for the Padres, Eduardo Escobar is the third baseman that's representing the Diamondbacks. Trey Turner, the shortstop for the Washington Nationals, made it. The, Mookie Betts of the – oh, sorry.
These are nuts. Here. Like, go to the outfielders. These are absurd. It's Mookie Betts for the Dodgers. Brian Reynolds for the Pirates. Okay, that's their designated pick.
But Brian Reynolds has also had a spectacular season.
I know. They also had two All-Stars,
actually. They had a starter.
Who, their pitcher?
They had the starting second baseman,
Adam
right.
Frazier. Oh, Adam Frazier.
Well, he's batting like .303. He's incredible.
Okay, well, the Pirates are still like 2-20, so it's fine.
Sure.
Kyle Schwarber, who's been on a tear.
Yeah, he got so hot.
He home run like every at bat. He's like Ohtani if he could pitch, but he can't. Juan Soto, so another National, and then Chris Taylor of the Dodgers. Just the reserves in themselves are insane.
I'd like to raise my hand here real quick.
Go ahead.
This NL outfield is very disappointing. Not in general, because the names on the list are incredible, but this season in particular, Mookie Betts is batting like .240. He has no business being in the All-Star game. This is a disgrace, and somebody else should be there. Bryce Harper deserves to be there more than him, because Bryce Harper's played like 30 less games and has better stats than Mookie Betts. I understand Mookie Betts is maybe the best player in baseball when fully healthy, but he's clearly not doing it this year. The Dodgers are fine without it, but he's batting .244.
Then
Schwarber, I'm not super mad, because Schwarber had like a historic month this past yeah. June. But like before that, the dude was batting like maybe .230, maybe. And then Soto a little less than Betts, but Soto's also been having a down year. It's just so they're great players. But not this year.
But I'd rather have those guys as reserves, especially, than have Aroldis Chapman at like a closer for the Yankees. Come on.
I would rather let Kyle Schwarber pitch while injured than let Aroldis Chapman try and
win this All-Star game. Let's round out the pitchers.
Yeah, so just four relievers here for the NL. We got Josh Hader of the Brewers, Craig Kimbrell of the Cubs, Mark Melancon of the Padres, and Alex Reyes of the Cardinals. These are stacked, if I'm being honest. Kimbrell having an incredible bounce back year for the Cubs. He was awful when they signed him a little bit ago, and he's been one of, if not the best closer in baseball. His biggest competition has been his All-Star teammate Mark Melancon of the Padres. But all of these guys are absolute top tier relievers. There's no Aroldis Chapman on this list.
I know, it's great. I welcome it.
All right, any final thoughts? Anybody that really surprised you that either was or wasn't on this list?
I mean, I kind of touched upon Freeman. That's more just a surprise. It's name power. Freeman, Betts, you talked about Soto. Those three have not been having great years, like you said. But it's also, you know what they can do, and that's the impressive mm-hmm. thing for how dominant they are. So was it pandering? Probably a bit. But you need to do that. And I still think those guys, are going to have spectacular careers. You know, just this year's been a bit of a down year, but – Give him a pass, you know? They played last year in COVID.
Yeah, I mean, for Betts, at the very least, he can kind of coast during the regular season if he shows up in the postseason. So
that's all right. Oh, God, yeah.
Chris Taylor and Brian Reynolds, though, I don't want to discredit them. Those two absolutely deserve to be All-Stars. They've been fantastic. I think Chris Taylor was the first player to 60 runs. So spectacular season for both of those guys. So a little bit more here in the MLB, though. We talked about how the MLB was cracking down on pitchers using substances. One of the names we brought up was Trevor Bauer. However, the MLB has now removed him under different circumstances, as some light has been shown on a situation with a female that maybe didn't go as cleanly as it should have. I believe he was only suspended for a week by the MLB, but it seems like it's just going to be one of those that kind of keeps adding up until the situation is resolved. But
I mean, it's the chances?
Yeah, so what are the chances Bauer doesn't pitch again this year?
Ugh. I don't know. I don't think he should until the investigation's done. I mean, you have sort of a similar situation with Ozuna. I mean, you had very similar situation with it was Herrera, right, in the Phillies?
Yeah,
it was in Segura. I always get them mixed up. It's Herrera, 100%.
Yeah, it was Odubel, yeah.
You have these situations where, domestic violence and, assault, those things have sort of been at the forefront of MLB's problems. I mean, it's, kind of what the NFL dealt with a few years ago. I don't know how the situation is going to get resolved. you know, with Ozuna, I'm sure the Braves are looking for any excuse to be able to not guarantee his contract because he's not performing well, even out, you know, ignore all the domestic violence stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be interesting to see how it plays out. I think just from what was leaked, I don't know if it was from Bauer's camp or just in general, it sounds like they're trying, like, it sounds like from the end of all this, it's going to be a settlement and they're going to settle. That doesn't mean Bauer is like innocent by any means, especially in the case of a settlement. I'm very curious to see what the MLB does. I think he should be suspended in terms of how long. That's, you know, up for debate, but I don't know. I really am curious because this could be sort of a landmark case, kind of like what happened with Ray Rice, where it starts with a suspension, there's outcry, and then like Bauer is like ousted from the MLB. And there's an investigation going on. I'm honestly pretty ignorant on the entire thing and need to like see what has occurred. From what it sounds like, not good whatsoever.
Nope.
And sounds like a very bad situation. So I mean, if it's from what I understand, I think Bauer should be suspended, and I think there should be a better domestic violence policy put in, especially in terms of repercussions for it, because it sounds like being sent home with pay, not a very good punishment.
Yeah, good job. You now don't have to work to make your money.
You don't have to get Tommy John surgery, and you get paid.
Exactly. Ah, plus, man, would it really help if Trevor Bauer didn't pitch for my fantasy team? He's on a division rival.
Ugh. Don't pick up players, period, because you just send them on bad paths. You're like the old Browns of fantasy baseball.
Oh, don't compare me to the Browns. That's mean.
Not when they beat the Steelers.
That's even meaner.
That's meaner.
All right, let's move forward here into our somewhat discussion about football, as our football report this week is actually a golf report. Yes. As Brady and Rodgers competed against each other in a celebrity-type golf match with some pros, and I believe Aaron Rodgers was the victorious party in this one. I don't know if anybody watched, but probably a fundraiser of some sorts, I assume he's having a good time. But hey, man, if you're trying to figure out who's better at certain things, Rodgers may just prove something. Who knows?
Yeah. Rodgers and Bryson DeChambeau won. They beat Brady and Phil Mickelson. A lot of good clips, though, both from Tom Brady chirping and like a lot of before stuff with like they played a bit of Jeopardy. They poked fun at Rodgers being unhappy in Green Bay. They poked fun of Brady and Belichick's relationship, things like that. So it was a lot of good fun and pretty enjoyable, at least the clips and media I saw. But it really goes to show like how much Aaron Rodgers seems like he hates Green Bay. Time will tell with that.
Yeah, but we'll of course keep you posted about that.
Honestly, though, what sport is worse to watch than golf, though? Because I couldn't justify watching golf. I could watch highlights.
Man, I think the only thing that would genuinely be harder for me to watch is NASCAR, just because I'd be like in a trance of just I'm watching you. Like, I understand it's more fast paced. Like, you're just going in a circle. This isn't impressive. You're doing something everybody learns how to do at the age of 16.
You're not wrong. But I guess what I will say, though, is, like, you could be one of those people who, like, watches NASCAR solely to see crashes. Because I'm sure there's a nice dopamine kick.
Watching hockey to see fights.
Yeah, but, like, you know, you see, like, a 12-car pileup, and you're like, whoa.
True.
I never watched cricket. I imagine cricket could be boring just because it goes for so long and you wouldn't understand the rules. Yeah,
days sometimes.
Yeah. All right, petition to replace golf with bowling.
I'd fuck with that.
No. Hold on. Better yet, pay bowlers what they pay golfers. That's egregious.
I'm going to get a nice shine on that bowling ball, let me tell you. All right, you want to let us know what random ass sports you want us to talk about? Please just let us know and we will do our very best.
I'll talk about anything.
We truly will. You heard our trivia. You know the random sports we try and pull out to try and get each other.
If we get a sponsor who says, all right, we'll pay for every episode, I want you to solely talk about cricket, I'll do it. No one will listen 100%. To it, but I will do it.
Hey, no one listens now.
Jesus, all right.
I kid. All right, but let's move into the NHL here. So we're into the Stanley Cup. We talked about that. We got the Lightning and the Canadiens here. Lightning jumped out to a commanding 3-0 series lead a couple nights back. Montreal was able to elongate the series, prolong the series, excuse me, after winning game four. Game five will be tonight. Thoughts on if we're going to even see a game six?
I would say highly unlikely. I think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep. However, I'm still holding out hope the Canadians can somehow come back, because that will make this shoe eating all the better. And what we wouldn't do for a good shoe eating.
Honestly.
I digress. But yeah, no, the Lightning have been the defending champions. They've really showed up. And I don't know if you could really like come after the Canadians for not playing well. I mean, they were the 8 seed in the West. They made this miraculous Cinderella run. And I think, you know, the clock is striking midnight. They've had their run. This is where it ends. And it's a great historic deep run, but they're going up against a Lightning team that has, you know, been there, done that, and they're showing everyone why they're the defending champions.
And they say Lightning doesn't strike twice.
Oh, that's a good one, Robbie. How long have you been thinking of that one? Weeks?
Oh, like months? No. That really just came to me. I'm really proud of that.
Ooh. All right. Well, I disagree. I think you planned that. You're trying to look cool for our listeners.
That's going to be the name of the episode right now.
Oh, no. It's negative four view listeners. It's like, what happened?
People unfollowed us because of it.
Of course.
But any other thoughts on the remains of the Stanley Cup here?
I think eventually, like, you know, hopefully the return of the Buffalo Sabres, you know, they have the number one draft pick again three times in 4 years.
Good God.
But if the Lightning win, I have no problem with it. I think it's funny that the great country of Canada is getting defeated by a team from Florida. So to me, that's kind of hilarious. And it's just NHL is so weird how things work, but I love it. It's been cool to see a lot of small, like, I call them small market teams in the sense that they weren't like the original few. They've been winning this cup the past few years. So
we always love that.
You got the Lightning past 2 years, you have the Blues, you have the Capitals. So things like that.
Yes. So 100%. We love the small market teams, mixing up a little bit, keeping it fresh. Regardless of what happens tonight, we will have a Stanley Cup champion to report about for you next week. So stay tuned about that. Yeah, I don't think game seven would go a whole week after today. So it would be like today, next week. So we'll keep you posted regardless on who wins the Stanley Cup. We're going to move, however, into the other playoffs. That would be basketball, the NBA. So last we left off, the Suns had made the finals, and I believe the Bucks were up 2-1 on Atlanta. Bucks, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, no, excuse me. I believe the Hawks tied it at 2.
They did.
And then the Bucks would go on to win in 6. Giannis, however, did not play games. So he got injured in game
4
and then did not play 5 or 6. It was thought to be a much more serious injury. He actually just had a statement last night that said he was worried he was going to miss an entire year right when it happened, just based off how it went down.
Mm-hmm.
But they prevailed without him. Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Bobby Portis really stepping up. And the Bucks advanced to the first final since Big O and Kareem. Game one, were, you know, Chris Paul's back. He's through COVID. So the Suns are at full health. The Bucks were really unsure. He was listed as doubtful going into the day. Then he was upgraded to questionable. And then it was kind of upgraded from like a doubtful questionable to a game time decision. And he was good, ready to go. And he played. He actually looked a lot better than from what it seemed like most people expected to see out of him. But it was more or less to no avail, as Phoenix pretty much from the back half of the second quarter on dominated that basketball game. Chris Paul, honestly, just everybody except for Jay Crowder making their finals debut and looking sharp, 8-22-19. Paul, I think 32-9. Booker had a 20 spot.
Yeah,
Aiden. The Suns are looking good.
Yeah, Aiden had 20, 12, and 20, I think.
I think he had 22-19.
Yeah, it was.
He went nuts.
Yeah, and, you know, the Suns played well, especially since only one person from their team has been in the finals. Let's talk about that one person, though, Jay Crowder. The stars were aligned for Jay Crowder to have a great breakout game and to provide some much needed role support for the Suns. He's the only person of the people who are currently in the NBA Finals to have already played an NBA Final, played last year at the Heat. He, I think, is cool, calm, and collected. He doesn't have to be the main scorer, so he's not drawing the best defenders. And it was his birthday. How many points did he score? One. A singular point. And when I watched him, I truthfully believe I could have shot the ball better than Jay Crowder. And I don't mean I would have scored more points than him. I think I would have ended with one as well. But I would have hit the rim because Jay Crowder was missing the rim every time.
See, this is really funny because we were talking about this beforehand and he brought up that story. But I was like, yeah, I was watching the first like 10, 15 minutes of the game and I just looked at my buddy and I was like, has Jay Crowder touched the basketball yet? Because, you know, when I was watching the Heat last year and the Suns this year, his role is essentially just do the dirty stuff. And then if you're given the ball on the perimeter, just shoot it. Just yep. Let it fly. So he doesn't really dribble. He doesn't really move with the ball very much. So, but very funny that, like, you know, all, yeah, like you said, all these things kind of aligned. It was his birthday. If you've ever played a sport on your birthday, you got that little extra pep in your step to try and perform a little better. And hey, the team won. So I'm sure he got the best birthday present he could have asked for besides the 30 spot. But
and Mikal Bridges actually stepped up for them. He played very well. He finished with 10 plus points. Going back to, so yeah, of course, Mikal Bridges drafted by the Sixers, traded to the Suns for whatever reason. I honestly think it was to make room for LeBron. And, you know, we saw how that turned out. Another member of the quote unquote process or another victim of the process, Dario Saric, played a few minutes, tore his ACL. My heart broke when I heard the news this morning. Love me some Dario. Honestly hope for a speedy, fast recovery. He was one of my favorite players to watch in the Sixers. But that's disappointing. What I will say, though, is the Suns shot lights out. Giannis looked good in terms of his health. Like, he had that chase down block of Mikal Bridges to close out the first half. Like, that was freakish. And I knew as soon as I saw him running, I'm like, he's going to block that. Like, or he's either going to block it or just run straight through the backboard. Either or. A few other observations. Chris Middleton, though, God tier scorer last night. No. Yeah. He scored all of their points last night, Robbie.
I know. I give him so much crap.
Drew Holiday was kind of the weak link here. I mean, Giannis, I think, finished with like – did he finish with in the 10s or did he finish like low 20s?
Oh, I don't know if he cracked 20.
Giannis was sitting about 13 points most of the game. I think he finished with like 18, maybe 20, give or take. Let's take a look. We'll play the over-under game. He finished with 20, so low 20s. Chris Middleton at 29. Drew Holiday only at 7, though. And that's going to be a problem. Drew Holiday needs to put up, I'd say, 15 to stand a chance. Giannis is going to put up more points when he gets healthy. Like, he had to be eased into things. Chris Middleton, I don't think, should be accounted for scoring 30 at nights. He literally had to shoot a three like every possession with the way the Suns were shooting. However, I will give Budenholzer and the Bucks some credit because I think they figured out something. They realized a defensive strategy to help stop the Suns a lot more. It is get Brook Lopez the hell off the court.
Yes.
They started doing it late third, early fourth, and they got the game within 9. They were down by 18, 20 points most of the game. They didn't win the game, but it showed that they had a little bit of defensive stops left in them. Chris Paul sort of evolved into the point god we've seen. Devin Booker put up a good amount of points and was shooting well. Like, the fact is his first NBA Finals, he's pretty young, didn't faze him whatsoever. But this is a good first step for the Bucks. I mean, they could potentially take game 2 if they continue with the lineup. It'll be interesting. I mean, Brook Lopez on pick and rolls is just a liability, period. He can't cover Chris Paul.
So let's just talk about this like it is and get mad at me if you want. But Brook Lopez is a big heaping pile of nothing. He's useless.
I disagree. He's
so bad at basketball.
Brook Lopez is useless against the Suns, and it's because DeAndre Ayton is a pretty athletic big, especially he's taller than Lopez, which is even scarier. If you had like a Rudy Gobert on their team, a slower big man who doesn't score a lot, that's where Brook Lopez's bread and butter is, because Brook Lopez can space the floor a bit more.
Yeah.
In this case, yeah, Brook Lopez is entirely useless. I think Brook Lopez is a good center and can be utilized, but yeah, not against the Suns team. You only utilize him if Chris Paul is off the floor and Ayton's off the floor. And even then, you get trouble with Booker being switched to a pick and roll.
Exactly. My biggest issue with the Bucks so far has just been their lack of depth. It's the roster. I mean, first of all, there's six players on the roster you can't even put in the game. You got five or six rookies or second year guys or Axel Topain who just don't belong in the NBA right now, so that you can't play. That's the issue.
What if they put in the other Antetokounmpo brother and you have this weird.
Thanasis shouldn't be playing either. Don't talk to me about Thanasis.
I don't disagree. What I'm saying though is maybe it's like the Ball family where if you put all three of them together, it'll just be superpowers. If you just trade for Kostas.
Last year in the regular season, Thanasis played 5 minutes. He started one game. He played 5 minutes, and it was literally the best 5 minutes of Bucks basketball I watched all year. They were actually playing. Him and Giannis were actually playing incredibly together.
However,
it was clearly a planned thing. It is not something that's going to happen all the time. And also, that's regardless. Pat Connaughton's getting about 15 to 20 minutes a game for the Bucks. Pat Connaughton doesn't play if he's on the Phoenix Suns. He doesn't touch the court. It's stuff like that. Okay. It's just there. I understand it, that rosters are built differently, but the players the Bucks have to use are just inferior to the ones that the Suns can bring into the game.
I don't disagree, but that's just in terms of depth. What I think the Suns should be remarked for, they had a lot of young players. They stocked up, and then they went out. They got Chris Paul. They got Jay Crowder to sort of fill out their roster, because then you have Mikal Bridges, Devin Booker, and Ayton, who is your number one pick. But you got guys like Cameron Payne. Their sharpshooter, they select 11. It's Cam Johnson?
No. Cam Johnson. I love Cam Johnson.
Yeah. You have all this. You have Sarish, who you got for either free agency or just nothing in terms of a trade. You got all these pieces that you sort of gathered up. And then Chris Paul was sort of that final keystone that you needed. And I don't know if that was their plan all along. I would hope so, because they really just – that was the only thing they were missing, a point guard. Yeah. But to me, they just – they had so much young talent and still do. They're like this. They are like the Hawks if you shove in a generational talent in there in Chris Paul. That's important.
Last question. No, you're 100% right. So I bring up one last question here, as this was brought up by our good sports reporting friend, Stephen A. Smith.
Of course.
If Phoenix Suns win the title, what are the chances they could become a dynasty? Obviously it all hinders on how much longer Chris Paul can play at this level, but what are the odds?
What constitutes a dynasty? Another championship?
Let's say they make the title. They have to make the title at least three times. They don't have to win it necessarily every time, but they have to at least make three or four.
They won't. And that's, I hate to say that. And it'll probably, it's like the whole Tom Brady thing where I say it and then it ends up happening every year. I truthfully believe Chris Paul's health is going to give out on him. And I'm surprised it hasn't already. Also, let's say it doesn't. You have to keep that roster together, which is only going to get harder when Booker is up for a supermax.
Same with Ayton.
That's going to be a problem. You have some of your younger players. This happens to any young team. Once you start having to sign them to big deals, it just gets worse and worse in terms of keeping everyone together.
Because I think Ayton's still on his rookie deal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he'll be up. I think he'll get the extension probably this summer.
This offseason, yeah.
But he'll have one more year. Maybe two. I think it's one.
Yeah, I think so.
What I will say, though, is even if you keep the entire group together, you still got to deal with LeBron and AD in the West for another year at least. You have to deal with the Donovan Mitchell revenge-ready Jazz, who I still think are a very big threat. You have the Clippers, if they can stay healthy, will be good, and if they get a center, but that's a different issue. There are a lot of teams. I mean, maybe the Mavs go all out this summer and finally get a third piece for Luka.
Let's get a second piece.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think they kind of need a second piece. Kristaps can be the third. And
they're their favorite stop for Kawhi right now. we'll get into the NBA offseason in a couple episodes.
Yeah. But like what I'm saying is there's such a tough road, and I'm not taking anything away from them. There wasn't a fluke this year. I think they got a lucky a little bit with some of the injuries. I don't think they can do it. I don't think they can make the finals two more years.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. There's maybe if you kind of get a nice lucky year and Chris Paul stays healthy, you could maybe get to another final. But I don't think two. I would be shocked.
Well, we shall certainly see. Either way, game two of the NBA Finals will take place tomorrow in Phoenix. Again, Phoenix leads the series 1-0 at this point in time.
Yo, Robbie, actually, you have money, right?
A little bit.
You should go to Milwaukee for game three.
I, first of all, wanted to go to watch Milwaukee play Miami, and I'm very glad that I didn't. Yeah. But it's possible, but those tickets are like cheap. It's going to be $200, man. This is the first time the Bucks are in the finals in the Giannis era. Like, this is going to be expensive.
I know, but it would be kind of, you're a little more feasible, right, than me in terms of
it's true. There. It's only about like maybe a 4.5-5 hour drive max. It's not bad.
It's not terrible. But yeah. Also, though, just one quick caveat, because I need to throw it in there. It upsets me how bad the Bucks look, though, in terms of their depth, because I know the Sixers would have put up a better fight.
You.
I can't. I feel like an asshole for saying that, but like, it pains me to watch. And honestly, like, good for the Hawks for taking down the Sixers. Like,
I'm just gonna say this: the Bucks were not the best. Like, full health, the Bucks were not the best team in the Eastern Conference this year.
Oh, absolutely not.
But here we are in the NBA Finals. So we'll move forward with that and swallow all the pills that we have to, as both our teams went out earlier than we would have hoped. Moving on with the NBA news here, though. If you noticed that Rachel Nichols wasn't on the NBA Finals sideline, there is good reason for that. So she was caught, I guess, on video or on tape, essentially scheming to ensure that she does not lose out her job to a fellow female reporter. I believe it was Maya Taylor. Big issue, obviously, being that Maya Taylor being someone of color, so everybody believes it to be somewhat of a racial issue, as well as Rachel Nichols just trying to scheme to keep her job, which, you know, if I was her, I would be doing regardless, but getting caught is never a good thing. So there was a whole big deal with that. And if you're Rachel Nichols, it was just a tough day and tough week, because then news broke that, I guess, during the NBA bubble, her and my good pal Jimmy Butler had some sort of a rendezvous where they met up and did the nasty, from what I understand, which I guess was before he started dating Selena Gomez. So hats off to Jimmy Butler.
No, because Rachel Nichols is married.
Hey, man. Hey, man. Jimmy Butler's just here for Jimmy Butler. He's here to make coffee and get buckets. Regardless, Rachel Nichols is, like I said, not the sideline reporter, given all the news. Malika Andrews was selected to replace her, and she was there in game one and will be throughout the rest of the finals. But that was just one of the bigger stories swirling around the NBA world this past week. So that was kind of a fun one. And then the last bit of news for the NBA here being that NBA Commissioner Adam Silver does believe that the play-in tournament is going to remain. We shared our opinions on it, but, you know, it had a certain amount of success. To be honest, I was thinking about it, and it's really just like, there's no way the NBA can't benefit from this, because at the end of the day, it's extra games that people are going to pay to see and watch. So, yeah. And at the end of the day, as a fan, I was like, cool, you know, they're pointless, but they're NBA games. And the 9 seed did beat an 8 seed, so there was some point to it.
All right. The final piece of NBA news. This is a live reaction from Robbie. The NBA announced next season will be the 75th season of the NBA. They're announcing a new logo. I have seen it. Robbie has not. So I would like Robbie now to Google NBA 75th logo. Take a look at it. Give us your live reaction. Then we'll talk about it.
Oh, boy. Let's see what we got here. Is it the diamond?
It is the diamond.
That's terrible. What the fuck? What does a diamond do for – what's a diamond in basketball?
I don't think you understand, Robbie. It's the essence of baseball. I don't think you're missing out.
You're ruining my favorite sport, basketball.
All right. This is awful, guys.
Don't even look at this. It's still Jerry West, too.
Yeah. Basically, you're not missing much. It's the NBA logo, the Jerry West silhouette, and basically shoved inside of a diamond with, I think, I don't know, does it say 75 in there?
It does say 75 on there.
Yeah, so to commemorate it. It is an awful logo. I don't think anyone's going to, like, defend it, per se. What I do think, and let's you know, pump the brakes for a second. What I want to say is this is a good way of leaning into the idea of a logo change. I think that could be a good purpose for it. Because, look, this logo, I don't think anyone's going to say that's a good logo. I think the original NBA one's significantly better. But what this does is maybe there is a logo change in the coming years. Maybe you have that Kobe Bryant silhouette. Maybe you have the MJ one. Maybe if LeBron retires in a few years, maybe you get LeBron. There's a lot of changes that can be made to it, and I think that's sort of what they're gearing up with. If you hit rock bottom, even if you have some critics who hate the new logo, you're going to have a lot of people who say that's better than the last one. So yeah,
no, I agree with you. I don't know if you saw one of the old, like, OG logos. Those shits are funny. We should go back to those.
What I will say, though, is I think it was good. Like, you could have made a Kobe Bryant logo for the 75th, but if you went away from that, there would have been an outcry of anger. And I don't blame it, because it would have probably been nice to see and then have it taken away. So in this case, you still have the Jerry West one. The logo sucks, but now you have, you know, the chance to change it and I think make it better in the future. So I'm going to hope that's the idea. If not, well, then here's my crazy crackpot conspiracy. Take it or leave it.
I'm going to hope for you, because I like that plan.
I like it too.
All right. Before we get into our next 10 of our top 50 rank, we just got a little bit of news for the Olympics here. Olympics about 2 weeks out at this point. You know, we're going to let you know about, you know, the big events, the records, all the good stuff. There is going to be a slight focus on basketball, just because we focus a lot on basketball and there's a full team. It's a full team sport in the Olympics. So the USA basketball news would be that Jason Tatum is going to be wearing number 10 during the Olympics. And if that rings any bells, it's because that is the number that the late Kobe Bryant wore. The story really being that Tatum's truly honored to be getting this. So if you remember, you know, Tatum's rookie season, he made the Eastern Conference Finals. Celtics lost, but he played exceptionally. And that was when Kobe Bryant was doing his series, you know, kind of breaking down individual players' performances during the playoffs. And he broke down Tatum's, and Tatum really liked it. And they ended up working out together during the summer. And it was going to turn into this really cool mentor-mentee type thing. And then, as we know, unfortunately, Kobe Bryant passed. But, man, if you watch – people like to say it's Devin Booker, but Jason Tatum's the player most like Kobe Bryant in the modern NBA. It's really not close. Just the way he attacks on offense, the way he's built on defense, it's incredible to watch. So I love that Jason Tatum is the player. You know, I don't like the Celtics, but I love Jason Tatum getting to be the guy to wear Kobe's old jersey, because it's different, because nobody in a Lakers uniform should ever get to wear 8 or 24 ever again, because that needs to be a shrine to the great career of Kobe Bryant. But the Olympics is a little different. The Olympics is, you want his legacy to continue. And that would be letting somebody else get to wear the number 10, just like someone like Tatum, who is going to really use that and embody what Kobe Bryant meant to USA basketball. So I thought that was really cool. I wanted to shout out Tatum and the number 10 there. Also, you know, number 10 is just a big number in the world of soccer. And I wonder, because Kobe had such a big, you know, impact, you know, soccer had such a big impact on Kobe's life. I always wondered if that was part of the reason as to why he wore the number 10 for the Olympics.
I thought for a split second, and like everything Robbie said is true, and I echo the same sentiment. I thought for a split second you were going to say, I wonder if that's why Leo Messi wears number 10. I was like, Robbie, you're going into very uncharted waters here.
No. None of that here. But yeah, so there's that. The Australian team named their two flag bearers. One will be San Antonio Spurs point guard Patty Mills, which I thought was really cool, and he said was a huge honor. The other, I believe the name is Kate Campbell. She's going to be the first female swimmer to ever be a flag bearer for Australia. There's a big article about it I read, so that was kind of cool. Patty Mills was the name that caught my eye. He's a player I've always loved, and so seeing their flag bearers was a cool thing. We'll see who ends up bringing them out for America and the rest of the world as well. The big news for the Olympics, though, was that there's very likely going to be a state of emergency in Tokyo during the Olympics, actually now until through the Olympics, due to COVID. For the past 2 months, there have been rising COVID cases, surging COVID cases. They're going to make a decision on Friday, an official decision on whether, you know, fans and vendors are going to be allowed in the area, how many fans, basically what the situation is going to be if the state of emergency is in fact going to be put into place. But from what it sounds like, this is going to be, as we could have expected, a very unique Olympic Games, already got pushed off a year. And now the potential of no fans in the building, you know, it may help sometimes, it may hurt sometimes. You know, I was bringing up earlier the idea that a sprinter is so used to the crowd roaring that they know what the sound of the gun is compared to everything else. If it's silent, they're really just waiting for that noise. So if something else happens and they jump, they're disqualified. That's it. That's how the Olympics work. And that could be detrimental. But something like basketball, you know, those players kind of got used to playing without fans. And also Team USA is going to win the gold medal regardless. That's not me being a biased American. That's me looking at these rosters and telling you that America is going to win the basketball medal. That doesn't matter if fans are in the building. Fencing probably doesn't matter if fans are in the building. But there are sports that it really can affect. And we're going to see if that actually has to come into play or not.
I will say, though, if there are not, like, vendors or fans allowed at the Olympics, there's, like, a legitimate chance, like, Japan could go into, like, economic ruin. And this is an aside. For any Olympics, they, for the most part, build state-of-the-art stadiums because they get the bids. And this is for most other countries. Like, the U.S. is, you know, blessed in the sense that they have a ton of sports teams and are able to have a bunch of stadiums. But, like, in Rio in 2016, they had to build multiple stadiums. And Brazil, like, it's in, I'd say, a second world country. It's definitely not a third, but whatever it is, putting all the stadiums in, like, it crippled them economically, but you make it back through tickets, you make it back through selling stuff, revenue, merchandise, etc. If you can't have people selling stuff or, like, selling tickets, like, you have your TV rights, but oh my goodness, you are left with a lot of economic debt. You're left with stadiums that you probably won't use for much. And you're left with probably a lot of pollution that you cause. So it'll be very interesting. I'm very curious to see if that will be, I'm pretty sure it will be taken into account. I'm curious to see what Japan decides. And I think that could be an interesting development, to say the least. So just another thought.
All right, like we said, Olympics just about under two weeks away here, so we're ready to report on, you know, whatever version of the games we get to do for you guys. But until then, we are going to move on back into our listing of the top 50 current NBA players. We are going to be doing numbers 30 through 21 today. If you want to get caught up, listen to our past two episodes for 50 through 31. All right, so this is the part for me where it's going to get dicey. I'm going to piss a lot of people off. I'm going to make myself really happy. Here we go. Let's get right into it. Alex, who is the 30th best basketball player in your mind?
Julius Randle.
All right. I had him at 31 last week, so good start here.
Yeah, most improved player. He, I would say, is the main reason the Knicks made the playoffs this past year. But as we saw, he is not the man to carry them to the promised land. He is a great, I would say, a second star. I think if you paired him up with a better player, you could do a lot of damage with him. So maybe someone will come this offseason, but I got to give him credit for bringing a sorry franchise like New York to the playoffs, for having sort of a breakout year. He's always been good, just never been the focal point of any team. Like when he was on the Lakers, he kind of had to be the focal point, but like wasn't really developed. He went to the Pelicans, was alongside AD, could not be the focal point in that system. Now he's on the Knicks, is doing pretty well. You know, it'll be interesting to see where he develops from here, but I'll give Julius Randle the 30th best player in the league. I have no qualms with that.
No, it's a pretty good spot for him. I mean, like I said, I had him at 31, so right around the same spot. For me, number 30 is the Denver Nuggets point guard, Jamal Murray. Murray going to be coming off that torn ACL, so he'll have some work to do to get ready for next season. Coming off one of the hottest postseason performances we've ever seen out of a player in the NBA bubble. Struggled to start the year, but showed a lot of improvement on defense, then started to turn around on offense. Unfortunately, would eventually get hurt. But the biggest thing that's going for Murray is that dude has the it factor. He has that clutch gene in his veins, ice in the veins. This man, when the last 5 minutes of a close game come on, he is the guy that has the basketball and is shooting the ball, despite having the MVP on their team. It is incredible to watch at times. It's a lot of consistency with him. He's in a similar spot that a lot of point guards are in where you can do it, but you got to be able to do it every single day without fail to be considered a superstar. But for now, I think 30 is a pretty fair spot for Jamal Murray. I think he's right on that cusp of a top 25 player. That's where I'm going to have him now. 21 points per game in 2021 before the injury. And we'll see where he and Jokic can move forward once he's back and healthy.
All right. I think it's a bit low, to be honest, but we'll get to that. So 29 for me is Chris Middleton.
Right.
We've talked. Listen, I know you go back and forth on him. I think what's important to know, undrafted free agent, played in the G League, and is the second best player on the Bucks.
First G Leaguer to ever make the All-Star game.
Exactly. And I think what's really important to say, without Chris Middleton, without Giannis, the Bucks wouldn't be good. But without Chris Middleton, the Bucks wouldn't be able to keep winning in the playoffs. Like, Chris Middleton does a lot of the scoring that is necessary, especially a lot of the shooting and clutch shooting that is necessary to keep the Bucks in these games. Great player, definitely a real started from the bottom. Now we're here. A lot of people, and I think even myself included, were confused at the extension he got. I don't mean that like he deserved to be paid, but you know, he got a near max extent, like 5 years, $100+ million. And you think, okay, can they really sign a third star with what they have left? But Chris Middleton has showed up. He is definitely worth this contract and has done a lot. Down 1-0 in the finals. Time will tell if he can really, you know, be the player the Bucks need him to be, but I am at 29 right now.
Yeah, no, that's pretty fair. My 29 is what I'm going to believe the largest disparity that we have in our two lists. 29 for me is the Toronto Raptors point guard, Kyle Lowry. I am very high on Kyle Lowry. I understand he's a little older now. He's gotten a step slower, and he's maybe not as consistent of a shooter as he once was. Still one of the best defensive point guards we have in basketball, still one of the highest energy players we have in basketball, and one of the best stat sheet stuffers. I mean, 17, 5.5, and 7 in a down year is nothing to scoff at. Kyle Lowry, one of those few players that in the prime of his career was able to average 25, 5, and 5. You know, now he's not necessarily relied upon as much of a scorer. There's going to be a lot of trade talks about him, maybe to Philly, maybe to LA. But Lowry's a baller. Lowry's a grinder. If you put him in the right system, I always thought Memphis was a good spot for him. Maybe San Antonio, a place where he can really just kind of, you know, slap his hands on the floor, yell defense and grind. That's where he needs to be. We'll see if Toronto's able to move him there, but I still see a lot of upside in a guy like Kyle Lowry. So I got him at 29.
I think for his career, it's definitely fair to have him put there, but I don't think he's better than some of the players you're going to have that you had below him. And that's just because of age. But I think in terms of his career, yeah, you have to acknowledge those accolades.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was smirking. I was just thinking about something. I'm going to do like a
very good. I also realize Zach LaVine is going to be the biggest disparity that we have, but
well, in terms of like, why the hell is he that low? Yeah. In terms of actual numbers, I don't think it ended up being that bad, but yeah.
Okay.
Sure. All right, so I'm going to do like a player announcement for this one because I feel like it. Coming in number 28, he's the beast from the west of Europe, and he's big and tall. We got number 27 for center, Utah Jazz, Rude Boy, Rudy Gobert.
Shit, all right, let's get into this. Where the hell is he doing down here?
Look,
and this isn't me speaking necessarily. This is the general basketball fans.
this is the masses. I respect Rudy Gobert as a player. It is important to play defense, but he is incredibly useless at offense. He'll put up like 10, 12 points. I also think a lot of times, and this doesn't get credit enough, he gets beat a lot on defense. He can cover forwards, and I mean like fours and fives that are pretty slow. Mm-hmm. But even then, you got people like Ben Simmons who are absolutely torching him.
Mm-hmm.
You have other bigs like Embiid who can put up a ton of points. To me, Gobert, like, is I love defensive-minded players, and Gobert definitely fits that. But I think a lot of times, if it's that's your only accolade and you unfortunately can't cover a whole lot of people, he's a decent rim protector. But to me, just – I don't know. I'm a little low on Rudy Gobert. And especially because there's a lot of other players I would want over him.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't lead teams. That's not what he does.
Yeah, he's
that,
not.
That's a big thing that he doesn't do for being such a high caliber player. And like you mentioned, like you alluded to, if you ever need to know the limit of Rudy Gobert's defensive ability, understand that he gave up 42 points to the worst offensive player in basketball, Ben Simmons. We'll get to that in a moment here. That was your number 28, though?
Yep.
All right. All right, Rudy Gobert, number 28 for you. For me, I'm going to go with the – I don't know if he's a shooting guard or a small forward, but we're going to figure it out together. The Boston Celtics' very own Jaylen Brown.
Okay.
Excellent season for Jaylen Brown this past year. Really showed up. He was someone I kind of wanted to put in my top 25, but when I really got down to it, he didn't quite make the cut for top 25. Very well on his way. I think where he may not be the Celtics' best player, I do think he is their most important player. I think you can definitely build around him and Tatum, but you need to commit to that as they have by trading Kemba. Jaylen Brown's a budding superstar. I don't know if he'll ever quite get to the rank of superstar, but he can do everything. He reminds me a lot of Jimmy Butler in terms of what he can do. There isn't anything he's necessarily bad at. It's about polishing up. It's about consistency and being able to do it on that every night basis. With Tatum in the lineup, you know, he's never going to lead the team in scoring, but he's an excellent basketball player. Like I said, there really isn't anything he's bad at, and that goes a long way in the NBA.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I also think his situation is different where Jason Tatum is better than him. I don't think anyone will argue that, so I don't think he can be the leader, but I like a lot of things Jaylen Brown can do. I think he's a lot like Jason Tatum. That's sort of the problem. You can't have two of them, especially when it comes to a leader. So he kind of has to take that backseat. But he's definitely played very well in his early career. And, you know, time will tell if he stays healthy, especially if he goes to a different team. I think he can do a lot of good for a team that needs a sort of a small forward player.
Oh, yeah. I think him in Dallas would be crazy.
I agree. But I don't know
if that'll happen.
The Celtics don't trade people unless it's Kemba Walker.
I would also be shocked if the Celtics wanted Kristaps Porzingis.
God, but they do need a center. That's kind of nice.
What do you mean, Big Al?
Al Horford is a forward, and that's the only argument I can make without getting angry.
That's it. Let's move on here, as we don't need to talk about Boston Celtics centers quite yet.
All right, let's try another player introduction, because I had some fun doing a really cringy one for Rudy Gobert.
Let's do it. Right, 27.
Coming in at number 27, you know him from the land down under. You got – you don't like that intro?
No, I love it.
Coming in from the land down under. He may be under, but if you bet on his points, he'll also be under because he doesn't shoot. It's point guard forward for the Sixers, number 25, Ben Simmons. Benny boy here has played very well, and – I don't even know how I feel with this ranking because I think there's basis for putting him lower in terms of what he does in the postseason. But you can't argue with his regular season accolades. I know you could say he's been regressing since his rookie year, but statistically. But what Ben Simmons does on defense is so important and so vital. He can effectively cover 1 through 5 very well and does it to a great ability. All defensive team this year. A great tandem piece with Joel Embiid. I think the problem is that sort of mental aspect of the game. If that man had a jumper, he would basically be LeBron James, and that's what's terrifying. But he hasn't had it yet. It's disappointing. And just from the way he shied away in the playoffs this year, I gotta put him down here. It's disappointing, but number 27, I have Ben Simmons, I begrudgingly say.
I am going to leave this be because I'm going to dig on to Ben Simmons when I get to him, but 27 is pretty close to where I have him. So no qualms here, but yeah, Simmons, I mean, everybody's eyes were opened about Ben Simmons, this postseason run for Philly, despite Embiid's injury, he had his pitfalls. And that dropped him on a lot of people's lists, I would assume. Number 27 for me, somebody you already touched upon today, that would be Milwaukee Bucks, Chris Middleton. Man, I get earfuls by my Bucks fan friends about Chris Middleton because I give him endless shit. I haven't seen it honestly this postseason run aside. I hadn't seen it from Chris Middleton on a consistent basis. I didn't believe that he could be their leading scorer. He could be their go-to guy. He could do everything with Giannis in the lineup. He can. Can he do it every single game? Absolutely not if Giannis is on the court. And that's the biggest issue is Chris Middleton is just so close to taking that next step, but it's just like, will he actually be able to do it playing with a guy like Giannis? It's like, you can only be so good with someone like that kind of hawking around. Middleton has been the big shot maker though for this team. He's going to be because Giannis isn't a shot maker. That's not what he does, despite the fact that he's the team's leading scorer. Middleton's an underrated defender as well. My issues with him are consistency. It's you should be as good as you can be every single day. So just start doing it, and you're a top 25 basketball player without question.
Hey, fair enough. I think we're pretty close in terms of what we said about him and where we had him. Mm-hmm. All right, so one before 25, if not mistaken. So we'll go to 26. You know this man, one of the best shooters to ever grace God-given earth. He may have no tendons left in his body after these past 2 years. They say his body was sculpted out of clay. That's where he got his name. We got number 11 for the Golden State Warriors shooting guard, Klay Thompson.
Klay, baby.
And people will say this is too high considering he's not played in the past 2 years. I am telling you, you are forgetting what Klay Thompson can do. There is a reason the Warriors won 3 titles and went to 5 in, you know, those 5 years. Klay Thompson is a freak of nature, one of the best shooters in the world. Sometimes he'll shoot the ball in the rim, or the basket itself, like the netting does not move. And that's terrifying. That is a perfect
shot. Maybe the prettiest jump shot in NBA history.
Absolutely. And to me, he is such a good shooter, but also his defense does not get talked about a lot. He can play such exceptional defense, especially what is asked for him in terms of a team that is very offensively based. People were starting to write off Steph Curry that he was old and like injured and whatnot. And Steph Curry showed up and showed everyone, you know, why he was MVP and the only unanimous MVP. I'm confident if Klay Thompson can return 80% of what he used to be, you're going to see the same deal, like why the Golden State Warriors were so good even before Kevin Durant got there. So I'm putting Klay Thompson at 26. The caveat to that is I hope he's healthy next year because he's an exciting player to watch.
Yes, our big caveat on Klay being on this list is that we understand how good he was, and we hope he can at least be close enough to that level at this point, which is why we're both going to have him on our lists. Excellent spot for Klay. Number 26 for me, he was number 25 for me until today when I had to do some readjusting because of that Aussie. Number 26 for me is who I believe the player closest to, being Nikola Jokic in terms of just play style. That would be the Indiana Pacers power forward, Domantas Sabonis. You heard, if you listen to our All-Star game reports and episodes, you know how high I am on Domantas Sabonis. One of the best offensive big men in basketball, 21, 12, and 7, a triple-double machine. There truly is nothing he can't do on the offensive side of things. His pitfalls come on defense. He is a below-average defensive player. That is it. That's it. This list from essentially 30 to like 18, those players are either like this close or one definitive trait away from being NBA superstars. Domantas Sabonis' definitive trait is his defense. If his defense improves, he can in fact be a player to lead the Pacers into the playoffs, not just that shitty play-in tournament that we're going to keep getting. I love Domantas Sabonis. I think he can take that next step. Offense was always going to be what came first for him. He's great at that. You don't need to keep going. I mean, obviously keep trying to improve, but work on the rest of your game. Become a full, well-rounded basketball player. I think he can do it, and he'll be in my top 25.
All right, we'll try another one of these. So we're hit 25 now. Here we go. Some like it hot, some like it cold. This man certainly likes it ice cold. We got Ice Trey Young, number 11, point guard for the Atlanta Hawks. I know you have him higher. I think the thing I would say about it is it's too much of just watching the playoffs and seeing what he can do. And he had an exceptional playoff run. I would say give him more time. I really want to see what he actually consistently can do because he at times looks like a phenomenal superstar and will drop 40. Other times he'll drop 11 and you're like, okay, what the hell was that? But there's a bright future for Trey Young. And I think Trae Young is starting to make that Hawks-Mavericks trade seem a little bit more like that was kind of even. I still think the Mavs got Luka Doncic, which is the better player. However, Trae Young is definitely earning his keep in Atlanta.
Trae Young's been further in the playoffs.
True. Trae Young hasn't been in the West, though.
Trae Young has not had to play Kawhi Leonard in round one. That's absolutely correct. But
twice, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing about Trae Young is the same about Sabonis, but even more exaggerated because Trae Young is maybe the worst defensive point guard in basketball. That's it. He is almost Steph Curry levels at offense, but he is also Steph Curry levels of defense, and that's the issue. And he's shorter, which is the biggest issue, is when you're a short, poor defensive player. I mean, you can be a Fred VanVleet. You can be under 6 feet and an excellent defender. That's not the case with Trae Young. All right, that's your that was the first in your top 25. I respect it, as I also have a point guard as my 25th player. I give him a lot of shit because I always say about him, I believe he can be a top three player in basketball based off how good he already is. But he has one thing holding him back, and that is because I could score the basketball at the NBA level better than this man could. Number 25, Mr. Ben Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers has fallen from grace for me. He was in my top 15, or at 15 when I started this list. He has dropped 10 spots since then. He, like I said, our eyes were opened in the playoffs as to what he really does. He is, if not the one of the very best and most versatile defensive players in basketball. I actually do think he's a better defensive player than Rudy Gobert and Bam Adebayo. He's an excellent passer. He's an exceptional rebounder. He is, to this day, the worst scorer I have ever watched play professional basketball. It's hilarious how little he knows about scoring the basketball. He doesn't shoot jump shots. He just doesn't do it unless it's a random wide open three he's just feeling. He really just doesn't ever look to do it. And that's the biggest issue, is I don't care if you aren't a good scorer. And I don't care if you don't look to score. But if the best option for your team is for you to turn the fuck around and shoot the basketball, turn the fuck around and shoot the basketball. Ben Simmons, that is not an option in his mind. It's not just offense for Ben Simmons. It's mental at this point. He has to know what to do with the basketball in his hands. And sometimes that means do the thing you don't want to do. I'm sorry. Very rarely does a player actually get better by just playing basketball. Ben Simmons just needs to play a bunch of games and let himself shoot the ball, get the rust off, learn what feels good in terms of a release. Like I said, this man could be top 10 without question, but he can't score. He can't do the one single most important thing in the modern NBA. He can't score the basketball. That's why he's fallen. That's why he's number 25 for me. But again, I do not want to disparage how good a defense this guy is.
All right.
That was a big Ben Simmons rant.
I know. I mean, I didn't want to pile on, so I'm glad you said it. All right. 24. Do I have anything left in the tank in terms of the announcement?
Come on, you got it.
Oh, boy. This one's a tough one. This one isn't easy to make stuff up about. something arrow celebration. They call him Robin Hood. He be stealing from the pros and giving to the Nugs. I don't know. Jamal Murray, point guard 27. Oh, that wasn't very good. But thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so I know. Jamal Murray's on here. Jamal Murray suffered a horrible injury with his ACL tear. What I will say, though, is this guy, he started off slow, like Robbie had alluded to earlier. But when he gets hot, he is unstoppable. I think he plays pretty exceptional defense, especially for the point guard position. One of the clutchest players I've seen, especially when it came to the bubble. And if you need scoring, he's kind of the guy to do it. So I give Jamal Murray the benefit of the doubt here. Young, and I really do see a bright future with him and Jokic together as a tandem, as long as they both stay healthy. So for 24, I got Jamal Murray.
All right. We're only six off on that one. That's not too bad. Number 24 for me, you've already hit this guy. He did not play in 2020, but when he is healthy, and I do not say this lightly, ladies and gentlemen, the best 3-and-D player in the history of the NBA, the 24th best player in the modern NBA, Mr. Klay Thompson. I understand he's hurt. I understand he may not be as good as he once was when he comes back, but if he is, we forget how important he was because of Steph Curry, because of Draymond Green, the defense he played, the shots, the fact that he scored, what was it, 40 points or like 60 or 70 points on 11 dribbles. That's absurd. That's unheard of. This man can light it up just as well as his Splash Brother team. They were the Splash Brothers, not just Steph Curry. There was a reason for that. This man, like I said before, when you listed him, the prettiest, most picturesque form, perfect jump shot in NBA history. And man, I hope he's healthy because I love Klay Thompson. He was always my favorite player on those Warriors teams. We'll see what we get from him. But if he can come back, he is a top 25 player. He is, and there's no doubt in my mind about that.
All right, 23 for me. Some people may call him a poor man's Jason Tatum. I, for one, disagree, but also I do agree. Something, luck of the Irish. Man's not lucky. Man's just good. We got shooting guard or whatever you want to call him, small forward for number 7 for the Celtics, Jaylen Brown. He is no Jason Tatum. He is a poor man's Jason Tatum, but I really do think if you put him on a team, like isolated him, he could, I don't know if he could be the one option yet, but he easily could be the number 2 option on a championship team. Mm-hmm. Scores at will, freakishly athletic, hard player to stop and plays pretty good defense, can both shoot, drive, and create opportunities for himself. I got not much else to say. I mean, dude's a freak. I just think he's in Tatum's shadow, unfortunately, and that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, we'll see what Boston's able to do with them, too, because if they can figure out a way to make both of them the stars, like, that's going to be a special team. All right, you know how at the beginning of this and beginning of all of this, I said I wanted the smoke. I want all of it.
Okay.
Here we go. Number 23, shooting guard. I don't think he's led the league in scoring. He did not lead the league in scoring this year, but he was damn near close. But I think probably the most overrated player in basketball today. Number 23, shooting guard for the Washington Wizards, Bradley Beal. He is top 3 scorers in basketball, up there with Dame, Curry, and okay, top 4, Durant. He is a top tier NBA scorer. But can I ask you something? What the hell else does he do?
Well, he probably does enough for you to beg for him every offseason, so.
That's because the Miami Heat specifically need somebody who can put the ball in the basket.
That's just helpful. Butler's an all-star.
Don't piss me off yet. Bradley Beal is an amazing scorer, but the Wizards were like the worst team in the East last year. But Russell Westbrook comes along, they make the playoffs. They have a hot end of the season. Russell Westbrook gets hurt during the season, they have a skid. I mean, Bradley Beal's not a leader. He's a joke of a leader. He's not the best player on a championship team. He can be the best scorer on a team. Sure. What the hell? But I mean, when we get into this part of the list, this is talking about guys that could go out on their own and lead teams to the playoffs. And Bradley Beal has never been that player. He is just an elite caliber scorer. And in the modern NBA, that goes a very long way. But like I said, Bradley Beal will never be the best player on a playoff or championship contending team. That's why I have him so low. The All-NBA third team was a joke to have him on it. I'm sorry. Russell Westbrook is the best Washington Wizard, and I will get to him next week.
All right. Number 22. So we're coming at the tail end of our list. Are we in Bedrock right now? Because all I see is Bam Bam Adebayo.
Oh, center bam, bam, baby.
For the Miami Heat. What number is he, 13?
13.
Yeah. Bam Adebayo makes this list, I think. You know, maybe it's your bias that's kind of influencing me, but Bam Adebayo has done a lot for the Heat. You know, works very well with Jimmy Butler, young, developing player. There's a reason the Heat, like, went to the finals last year. Like, part of it was Jimmy Butler, but also you can't disparage anything that Bam did. That block over Tatum's nasty. He's a great player offensively and defensively. I think his offense honestly could use a bit of work in terms of his ability to space the floor a bit. But I mean, he's young, he's developing, he's a great center. I think he's very useful, and yeah, that's about it.
Hey, you got no complaints from me for putting Bam in the top 25. We're real close on him though, I'll let you know that. But not exact. 22 for me is a different center in the NBA. Utah Jazz man, Rudy Gobert, the Stifle Tower. 14 points, 13 and a half boards. Best rebounder in basketball, best shot blocker in basketball, dog shit at everything else. But he is so good at those two things. He's not awful, awful at everything else, but he is so good at those two things that it does, in fact, carry him a very long way. Like we mentioned before, he's very limited on his perimeter defense and his offensive ability. But the things he does well, he does exceptionally well. He was a huge part of the Utah Jazz having the best record in the NBA this regular season. Got to give Rudy Gobert his credit, unfortunate to say, but the 3-time Defensive Player of the Year has earned his keep at this point. So number 22 for me, Stifle Tower, Rudy Gobert.
All right. Last one for this week. You know, for whatever reason, I think this man's favorite number should be 3, but it's not. He sometimes goes by 0, and why not? He's quite good. Or 4 sometimes. We got Mr. Triple-Double. You can call him Russell Westbrook. This is point horrible. Guard.
I hate you.
Number 4 for, listen, Russell Westbrook is the most freakishly athletic player I've ever seen. I've never seen a point guard go at the rim with such ferocity, such tenacity. And, you know, averaging a triple-double is no small feat. And, you know, he holds the record for most triple-doubles of all time. However, you know, I know you said the Wizards became a better team because of him, and I agree. Russell Westbrook, the one thing that's eluded him is his ability to play, you know, to win in the playoffs, to, you know, win a championship, obviously. I'm not saying it's all of his faults. I mean, granted, when he was on the Thunder and had averaged his first triple-double season, the next best player is Victor Oladipo. And that sounds great until you consider the fact that Victor Oladipo is a shell of himself in OKC. Hasn't really had a supporting cast. I mean, it clearly didn't mesh well with Harden in OKC. He is a great player. I think he is severely underrated and will be underrated by the end of his career. But honestly, his inability to shoot the three-pointer and his inability to, you know, win the big games is what's going to really hold him back. But he is going to be a top 10 point guard of all time.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to think he's better than Oscar Robertson. Oscar Robertson way won titles, but there were less teams in the league back then.
Yeah. I think you will be a top 5 point guard. I think you'll knock Stockton out of it. I think he's a better point guard than Stockton.
I agree. I completely agree. So, I think we're going to have a lot of modern point guards in the top 5 of all time.
Well, I'm thinking about Curry too, because you have to throw Steph Curry.
Oh, Curry's probably, if he's not 1, he's 2 at this point. So
yeah.
We'll get to Curry later in this list. But interesting. I have Russell Westbrook at a surefire top 20 player, so that's interesting. For me, to round out the list, you already got to him, but my man, Bam on the Bayou, Bam Adebayo, center for the Miami Heat. In my opinion, the most versatile defensive player, sub Giannis Antetokounmpo, in the league. When you talk about the defense of players like Bam Adebayo, Rudy Gobert, and Ben Simmons, it's very close. It's very minute, minuscule things. But the difference that sets Simmons and Adebayo, I think, above Gobert is the fact that they can guard everybody. There isn't a position on the court that they can't guard. 1 through 5 is doable. And then the reason why I have Bam ahead of both of them is because Bam's the best offensive player of those three by a long shot. Bam averaging just under 19 points per game, 9 boards, the big one being 5.5 assists per game, career high. An excellent passer, probably the second best passing center in basketball to Nikola Jokic. Maybe Sabonis. Sabonis is also an excellent passing big man. But you cannot discredit the impact Bam has on this team. When he's playing well, they're flying high. When he's struggling with that mid-range jump shot, you can tell how it limits them. I think he's got superstar potential. I don't know if he's gonna ever be a true superstar like that could lead a team by himself. But him and Jimmy are a special duo. You give them a third piece that's a little better than your Dragic or what Oladipo maybe could have been for them. That's a real team that can make a real shot at the championship. Bam can be the second piece. Bam, like I said, there's nobody he can't guard. He's done it to Giannis. He's guarded Trae Young, Chris Middleton, whoever you want. He can do it. He really can. Not quite top 20 yet because the offense still eludes him just a little bit, but well on his way. I love me my Bam. So number 21, Heat center Bam Adebayo. And look at that. We have just 20 players left on our top 50 list. These next 2 weeks are going to get very dicey between us, I'm sure.
Very contentious, to say the least. But yeah, we'll be back, and yeah, let us know what you think, and we'll definitely, oh God, we're gonna get flamed. I can tell once I have all these graphics made up for all of our, you know, choices, it's gonna be dodging bullets on social media, but that's kind of what we live for.
Oh yeah. That's why we're here, to please or piss off the masses. That's up for you guys, the masses, to decide. But like we said, we'll be back next week. Until then, enjoy the episode. As always, download Viget, use our All-Stars referral code, and yeah, we'll continue our top 50 list, give you some more updates on the NBA playoffs, and name a Stanley Cup champion next week. Until then, have a fantastic week, guys.
Take care, everyone.